Welcome back.
Welcome
to Phenomenal Flicks.
That's right. Welcome back to Phenomenal Flicks. Thank you for that amazing intro, Grant. And normally, as you know, I start out with the name of the film I'm reviewing, the cast, and the director, but it's been a couple months since I've done this, but as you can tell by the title, I'm actually not doing a solo review today. I'm doing some rapid reviews. I watched a lot of new films over the past few weeks, whether they be in the theaters or from streaming services or critical screeners that I've received. Some of these I was very much looking forward to reviewing, while others I just saw on a whim because they were on, you know, Netflix or streaming on Amazon Prime and whatnot. I'm not going to spoil anything. A few of these would have what I would consider major spoilers, so as always, I'm not going to spoil the movie in these reviews, but my goal here is to not spend more than 4 or 5 minutes on any given movie, giving you a brief rundown of what I did or did not like about a particular film, one of which I will actively be telling you to avoid, but that'll come later. So let's get started, shall we? I'm going to first focus on The New Mutants, because holy shit, I can't believe it actually got released. Now don't get me wrong, this is not an excited I can't believe it's got released, but more of a I didn't think we'd actually see the movie get released. So here's a quick backstory. The New Mutants has had about 5 release dates dating all the way back to April of 2018. It was pushed back multiple times. They were going to reshoot some scenes or add new scenes, which never ended up happening from what I've read. And they were also trying to avoid other films of the like of Deadpool and X-Men The Dark Phoenix. Then they were acquired by Disney, so it got pushed back a third time, I think, at that point, and then pushed back a fourth time or a fifth time due to COVID. There's 5 release dates this movie's had, so bear with me if I don't know exactly why. And I mentioned Dark Phoenix earlier. This movie is much better than Dark Phoenix, which in my opinion is not only the worst X-Men movie, but one of the worst comic book movies. But we're not here to discuss Dark Phoenix, I'm here to discuss The New Mutants. So the mere fact that it was actually released at the end of August is just kind of surreal. And frankly, while I wasn't super hyped for this, I was a tad bit excited to see it because I like the actors that are involved in it. I like the X-Men. And I like that it was going to be sort of this combination of the X-Men mythology mixed with a Breakfast Club vibe meets the teenagers from A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, the Dream Warriors vibe. What we got, however, was the literal definition of the word mediocre. Now, this is not a bad film. I don't want you to go in thinking like, oh, New Mutants is terrible. It's just fine. Like a movie that's just, you know, fine. The positives I have include the early horror elements that we see, and keep a note on the word early. These include the Smiley Men, as I'm going to call them. They didn't really have a name, but I'm going to call them the Smiley Men. These creatures, if you will, are kind of a mix of Slender Man and the Gentleman from the season 4 episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They're quite creepy. They're jarring when you first see them. I would say the acting in this is also very solid, with names such as Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones. You have Anya Taylor-Joy, who was in The Witch and Split, and you have Charlie Heaton, who you would know from Stranger Things. All fine young actors. You're bound to get some very solid performances, even if the accents that they have, like a Southern accent, a Russian accent, and an Irish accent, or Scottish, I'm sorry, she's Scottish, they are a little hit or miss. The negatives include the, you know, like I said, the accents, as well as a lot of the dialogue these kids are given. Now, these are good actors, so they're going to be able to be solid in the film, but the dialogue is just incredibly cheesy, and some of it's a little offensive to call someone like Pocahontas, because there's a Native American character that they call Pocahontas. Like, come on now. In today's day and age, that's what you're going to call them. And the horror elements that I liked at the beginning, the aspect of that kind of drops very early on. It stops being as kind of creepy and scary as it could be. The story is also pretty paint by numbers. It's nothing extraordinary. Nothing gets added to this dead Fox X-Men universe that we have now, because this is the last of the Fox X-Men. We're never going to see any more. Hugh Jackman's already out. And sure, Ryan Reynolds will play Deadpool in the Disney saga of Deadpool that comes out, but that actually works for that character. But aside from that, I mean, Fox X-Men is dead. They were going to recast everybody from here on out. So it tried to add to the mythology of that, but for no reason, because you'll never see what they're trying to do. So with that said, I'm going to give New Mutants a C-. The second film I viewed is a documentary made by HBO Max, and it's called Class Action Park. This was, no pun intended, one of the wildest rides I've ever experienced while watching a documentary. So Action Park was an amusement park in New Jersey that was so popular. It was the go-to spot for teenagers in the summer of, I think, from 1978 to the early part of the 90s. What makes it so unique and memorable, the park, I mean, is how dangerous that it was. Gen X kids, and I'd argue early millennials, are the last of what they call the latchkey kids, those who were outside until the sun went down, and sometimes after that having adventures and not a care in the world. So this park offered that while also offering the most insane and ridiculous like water slides and theme park rides I have ever heard of. Now, I've obviously never gone to this park, and it's said that this park was, you know, where kids from like age 6 to, which is just ridiculous, to about 22 would probably go. And it was said that not a day went by where some kid wasn't hurt at this park doing something. Kids would get skin lacerations from some of the rides, go into shock from the spring water being pumped into the pools, and even like dislocate their shoulders while either trying to swim, getting landed on by people jumping off of the like spring cliffs, or just some of the rides that they had. It's pretty phenomenal to see. And there were even deaths at this park. What I like so much about this documentary is the focus on the fun that they had, and quite frankly, the stupidity of this park. Former guests of the park were interviewed to talk about their experiences at them. And now they're in about their like late 30s, mid 40s, and they reminisce about how stupid and dangerous it was. And it makes it sound like this is sort of like a nostalgic feel, because of course they're nostalgic about going to this park and having the fun that they did. But looking back on it years later, they're saying there's no way in hell. There's one gentleman who even says, I had so much fun at this park, there's no way in hell as a 40 plus year old man I would ever let my kid go to this park. And I kind of see that too. Now, like I mentioned, I've never gone to this park, but I'm watching it and my kid mentality kicked in, and I was like, I would have been there. There's no way that I would not have been to this park if I had been given the opportunity to go to it. And then when sort of my, you know, adult brain catches up, I look at it with adult eyes and I go, I'm a fucking idiot. These people are fucking idiots for wanting to do the things that they do, because they had an alpine slide where you're on a cart and you just go down this very steep and fast hill on this cart. Well, the problem is most people aren't going to distribute their weight the correct way, so you're going to go flying off this cliff if you take a turn too fast. And a lot of these carts had broken brakes, and that caused, so if you even did know how to brake correctly, if you had a broken cart, that meant absolutely nothing. And this, I talked with my friend Ryan, who's been on this show before with the Jaws episode, and we sort of been like, it would have been so much fun, but no way in hell we do it now. And we both agreed we would have probably, if not died, got seriously injured at this park. And this alpine slide I'm talking about actually did end up killing someone there in 1980. So to go back to the point of the former park guests, they're happy for their experience at this park, but they don't glorify it. They tell you as much how dangerous and reckless and stupid it was. The film even starts to take the side at the end of the victims that either A, got hurt, or had a family member die, and it clearly lays out their pain with the loss of their family members. This doc is very much worth the watch if you have HBO Max. It's a loving and sort of morbid tribute to the dangers of growing up as a kid before the dawn of the internet and cell phones. So with that, I'm going to give Class Action Park an A. Switching gears from the documentary to a love-based feature film, we have The Broken Hearts Gallery, which is a modern-day love story based off heartbreak, trust, hoarding, and art. And yes, I'm making a little bit of a joke, but that's also kind of what the film's about. This film really actually snuck up on me. I was immediately drawn to the name and the poster, which has these two people staring at each other on a couch in the middle of a city with a neon sign saying the title of the film above it. I'm a sucker for names like this and posters like that. I was also drawn to Dacre Montgomery, an actor I'm a fan of thanks to his role as Billy in Stranger Things and Jason the Red Ranger in 2017's Power Rangers, which needed a fucking sequel, by the way, but this world is unjust. Back on topic, this film follows Lucy, played by, and forgive me, I doubt she's listening, why would she, but forgive me if I mispronounce this, Geraldine Viswanathan, I believe is how you pronounce it. Anyway, Lucy collects trinkets from her past relationships. She keeps them all in a box under her bed. She's been made fun of by her two friends and her roommates until one day she's had enough and meets Nick, played by Montgomery, an aspiring hotel manager, and it's a lot cuter and sweeter than it sounds. He's not like he's running a Marriott or anything, but anyway, he allows her to use his second story of the hotel as sort of an art gallery based on these trinkets. Lucy begins to get a social media following, and soon New Yorkers are adding to the collection with their own heartbreaking trinkets. So this film is just, it's really sweet, it's really heartfelt, and it's adorably cute, something I truly don't expect from rom-coms very often. I think the dialogue is very sharp, it's very well written and very witty. There's even some jokes about monogamy and polyamory, which, you know, a little peek behind the curtain, I'm a polyamorous person, and they kind of take a jab at polyamory, and it's really funny. Viswanathan is, she's impossible to dislike, as is Montgomery. They're just so electric together. You get chemistry right off the bat. And it was unique enough to stand on its own. Now, the film, I will never say, will reinvent the wheel. If you've seen a romantic comedy before, you know what's going on. You know what's going to happen. There's the, they meet, they like each other, but one of them doesn't tell this, and then they get in this fight because, oh my god, you liked someone else, that sort of thing. I mean, you're getting that here. But like I said, all the aforementioned things, like the sharp dialogue, the acting, the chemistry, the kind of beauty of it, for a rom-com, it is shot incredibly well with a lot of really nice lighting and a lot of good shadow work and whatnot. The characters are just so easy to grasp onto as well. Not just Lucy and Nick, but the side characters as well. I mean, both of them have friends that you look forward to them being back on screen, and I loved that as well. It also reminded me a little parts of it being shot of 500 Days of Summer, which I really liked. That put a smile on my face, and I doubt that was the point of it, but it was just really cool to see something like, oh, that reminded me of 500 Days of Summer. That's really nice. So with that said, I'm giving the Broken Heart Gallery a B+. Back in 2017, Netflix quietly dropped The Babysitter, a comedy horror film about, well, a babysitter, as well as her friends who attempt to sacrifice a 14-year-old boy to the devil. I love this movie. If you have a Netflix account, which, let's face it, most people do, so if you do, just go find it, watch it, and then, of course, watch the sequel afterwards, because if you're a completionist, you need to do that. I'm getting off track here. After watching this film in the Halloween time of 2017, I immediately wanted a sequel, which was actually announced not too long ago, and I completely forgot about it. Until, that is, I was scrolling around on Netflix looking for something to watch, and I saw that The Babysitter, Killer Queen, was there. Excellent. So, Babysitter 2, I'm just going to call it that for, you know, time's sake, picks up 2 years after the first film, where the main character, Cole, who is now, like I said, 16, attempts to navigate his life after his most traumatic experience. He's the weird kid, and no one believes him except for his friend from the first film as well, Melanie. His parents don't even believe him. They ditch school, and, well, I'm not going to spoil it, because this movie has a lot of fun moments and a lot of fun twists and turns. The high-energy, high-concept bloodfest that we saw in the first returns here, which is just this ridiculous horror Scott Pilgrim-esque screen effect that we get. There's a lot of things coming at you. The comedy, I feel, just like the first, is top-notch. The gore, which is a little CGI-heavy, but that's fine. It's delivered with just gallons and gallons and gallons of blood. The characters are lovely. I mean, at least as much as, you know, devil-worshipping teenagers can be.
I really enjoyed Ken Marino in this. He's the dad in the films. He's in the first one for 5 minutes at the most, and he gets a lot more screen time here as well as Chris Wilde, who plays Melanie's dad. They had all these small roles in the first movie, and then they were brought to the forefront here, and they're a lot funnier, and their screen time was very much appreciated. I did feel there were some holes when it comes to timeline things between the two films. And I feel the new girl that's introduced, her name is Phoebe, she's a little flat, but the film is still very enjoyable nonetheless. I do not really like director Mick Gee, but I like him with these two films. And with that said, I'm going to give The Babysitter, Killer Queen, a B+. Last and most definitely least, I watched Mulan. Fuck this movie. Just fuck this movie. It gets a D. An easy D. And you hear me being super negative. Here's the only reason it's not getting a lower score. And it's because it's actually a very beautiful looking movie. It's shot very well. The effects are nice. And the scope of it is just gorgeous. And I have to swallow my pride and agree to this. I have to understand that just because I don't like a movie doesn't mean it's not shot well. Avatar represent. However, fuck this movie. Not only were people forced to have a $10 a month Disney Plus account, but they're also forced to spend another $30 on top of this to view this movie. Now, this is going to work if you have a family, and obviously movie tickets and plus the whole COVID thing stop you from going to a movie. You don't want to spend $60 at a movie. But when you are a solo person, someone who reviews films for a living, someone who is actually looking forward to this movie, I had this in my top 10 most anticipated movies of the year, and you're going to make me spend $40 on this movie by myself. And that is just incredibly unjust. But aside from all of that, that truly pissed me off, this movie angered me more because it's bad. It is just bad. I do think it's fair to compare these Disney remakes to their animated counterparts. But unlike The Lion King, where even though I didn't like The Lion King at all, the I'm putting this in quotations, the live-action Lion King, I thought about the animated feature the entire time, and I was comparing it to that because it was just literally a CGI shot-for-shot remake of that. But I didn't think of Mulan once here, the animated Mulan from 1998, and it's not because, you know, this was telling the more true story of Mulan from, you know, back when she was a real person, but the film itself is just so barren and wasteful. Every single character is flat, boring, uninteresting. There is no one that is exciting here. Mulan herself is a dead-faced character. Furthermore, this girl who plays her, or at least Mulan the character in this, there is no fucking possible reality where this woman can get mistaken for a man. Because in the cartoon, the way it's animated is it's supposed to be exaggerated. So yes, you can buy that all these men are believing that Mulan is actually Ping. But here, you don't get any of that. You lose that in translation from animation to live action. The lack of excitement made this less than 2-hour flick feel like a 3-hour snore fest. I can agree that in a more realistic version of Mulan, aspects such as talking dragons and musical numbers can be eliminated, and I was actually looking forward to that. Yeah, Mushu's awesome, I'll Make a Man Out of You and Reflection are fucking bangers, but even if those are my two favorite parts of the animated film, they don't need to be in a live-action version because they're trying to take that realistic, gritty thing. But to differentiate this from the animated film, I actually forgot what I was watching from time to time. I was like, what am I watching? Oh, right, I'm watching Mulan. That's not a good thing. You should not forget what film you're watching when you're watching it. Okay, now, back to some more, I don't want to say political aspects, but angering aspects of the movie. The action is bland. You don't get any action here. And the characters are forgettable, as I mentioned. But I I could have forgiven the $40 if Disney would have made all of these things worthwhile. But you have these terrible characters, the lack of any fun, the lack of realism whatsoever. It's just, I'm spiting this movie with every ounce of anger I can. And knowing that Disney was so selfish and so greedy, plus the controversy surrounding the lead actress, Yafei Liu, plus them being no Shang, and the obvious fucking bisexual energy that he had with Ping and Mulan in the animated movie, which, by the way, was outstanding to look back on and realize that there was an LGBTQIA plus person in a movie in the 90s when that wasn't allowed and they weren't made fun of, because that's what that is. This entire thing just left a sour taste in my mouth. Don't support this movie, and do not spend $40 on it. Totally forgot to mention that I watched a documentary called Pretending I'm a Superman, the Tony Hawk skateboarding video game movie. If you have the $4 to spend on this on like Amazon, do it. It's so much fun to relive the nostalgic bits of being a kid who A, skateboarded and then played the Tony Hawk games growing up. It's really fun. It's got legendary skaters in it. It talks about skateboarding's past, the making of the video games, and all the bands such as Goldfinger, Primus, Bad Religion that became more famous because their songs were in the video game. And if you love skateboarding, go out and skateboard or play the Tony Hawk 1 and 2 remake, which is fucking great. So anyway, watch that as well. Sorry to add on to that. So I want to thank everyone for listening to these rapid reviews, part 2, Electric Boogaloo. This was a lot of fun. I got to enjoy a lot of films. I got to really hate on one, which I don't like being negative. Being negative about movies, while can be fun from time to time when they're like bad, but you can enjoy how bad they are. That's fun. That's fun negativity. But when it's something that's so visceral, like I'm gonna stop. I just need to already stop talking about Mulan. I just got done with the review and I'm already getting angry again. So thank you again, everyone, for listening. I hope you check out some of these movies. Check out New Mutants if you're interested in it, even though it didn't get a great grade. Please check out Class Action Park. That was fantastic. Watch both Babysitters. If you can see Broken Hearts Gallery, please do. Support filmmaking in any way you possibly can. If you're comfortable going to a movie theater, go to a movie theater. But be safe. Wear your mask and wash your hands and stay 6 feet apart. If you want to watch stuff at home, rent it the proper ways. Rent stuff that's not Mulan. And, you know, support these filmmakers. Because, yes, famous actors such as, you know, I didn't really review anyone quite famous here, but, you know, say Leonardo DiCaprio's next movie comes out. He doesn't need your $10 you're going to spend at the theater, but the people that work on the film, the gaffers, the hairstylists, the catering, the grips, those people are the ones who need your money. So support them while you can, if you also have the means to. Thank you again to Grant for the excellent opening that we see at the beginning of our show. Here at the beginning of our show. And thank you to my 2 Week Media cohorts as well. You can follow 2 Week Media at 2 Week Media on Twitter and Instagram, as well as Facebook, where you can find the umbrellas for this podcast, Phenomenal Flicks. Please look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. You can get That's Gotta Be Wrestling, the Wrestling Review Podcast, I Feel Petty, : Jess Hates Musicals, and Faking It as well. So thank you, everyone, and as always, stay phenomenal.